fluffy bread,
classic burger buns,
and so many carbs.
Carb fear is real, but Hero Bread makes healthier versions of the carb-heavy favorites we love most. We're talking fewer calories, 0 to 2 grams net carbs, zero sugar, and seriously great taste. Plus, more of the dietary fiber and protein you want with no compromise. Don't skip out on your favorites. Just use Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co with code HEROPOD at checkout. Fluffy bread, fresh tortillas, classic burger buns, and so many carbs. Carb fear is real, but Hero Bread makes healthier versions of the carb-heavy favorites we love most. We're talking fewer calories, 0 to 2 grams net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and seriously, great taste. Made from a new recipe using heart-healthy olive oil and resistant wheat starch that acts as a prebiotic fiber to promote gut health, Hero Bread products have more of the dietary fiber and protein you want without the net carbs and sugar you don't. There's something for every craving. Sliced bread loaves, buns, and tortillas, plus monthly small batch drops of indulgent favorites with no compromise. Like the 2-gram net carb Hero croissant or the 1-gram net carb Hero cheddar biscuit. Don't skip out on your favorites. Just use Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co with code HEROPOD at checkout. That's HEROPOD at HERO.CO.
Reading history, I pause to take a sigh about the land Afghanistan, where empires go to die. Alexander the Great, he tried and failed. The Mongols, they did too. The British and the Russians, they got their ass kicked too. America's been there many years, and I ask myself why we don't learn from history, where empires go to die. They say it's terrorism, that's political malarkey. Just follow where the money goes to a corporate oligarchy. The food crops they once grew with a plow and a hoe been turned into opium poppies, growing row on row. Our infrastructure's crumbling, our social structure too. It's a corporate scam, they don't give a damn while screwing over me and you. Outrage, I don't hear no public cry about sending young men and women where empires go to die. We lost people and treasure in Vietnam, and there still ain't no upside. We're doing the same in a no-win game where empires go to die. It's a new world order agenda with a demonic rising tide. They want America's soul in a deep dark hole where empires go to die.
On the night with Night Dreams Talk Radio with Gary Anderson. The views, opinions, and representations expressed on the Night Dreams Talk Radio Network and its website are those of the hosts, guests, and participants, and are not necessarily those of or endorsed by the network, its affiliated stations and broadcasts, the management, other hosts, or advertisers of the network. The shows found on the Night Dreams Talk Radio Network can, but do not necessarily, promote any particular lifestyle, belief, religion, political affiliation, or other personal practice. These shows are for entertainment purposes only, and are not intended to treat, diagnose, and or claim any cure of disease or condition, or give any medical or legal advice. You can advertise your business on Night Dreams Talk Radio, and you will be heard worldwide. Why not contact us at nightdreamstalkradio@gmail.com. Coming to you from some far point station, like a cosmic tumbleweed, both north and south of the Pleiades, here's your host, Gary Anderson.
Well, good evening, good morning, depending on your time zone. Gary here at Night Dreams Talk Radio, brought to you by Night Dreams Talk Radio Network. Well, here it is, September the 8th, 2021. And in the news today, in Queensland, Australia, they found the remains, the bones, of an ancient dragon. Now, James, this kind of, you know, makes it kind of, well, it kind of tells the story that dragons maybe did exist now.
I'm telling you, it's scary stuff. I've seen a lot of reports about dragons. Now, a lot of, they say, hey, it was just T-Rexes that they're finding, but you know what? Maybe it's not.
Oh, I know. And then in the news, can you believe a guy, another time traveler on TikTok, saying all these new claims that, well, just think, in a few days, a lot of people are going to vanish off this earth. They're going to be taken up to another planet by ETs. The reason why, I guess there's going to be some angry ETs coming down on our planet just in a few days. James, I'm scared. I'm going to go under my bed here tonight and wait.
Yeah, I read that. Matter of fact, I believe the 11th is the prediction, and like 4,000 of them is going to come down and commandeer a bunch of humans, or 4,000 humans, or whatever it is, and take them back to their planet. So, yeah, that's one of the predictions, so that's scary. Yeah, you better get on that blanket.
It is. And then on September 14th, he claims the world will have the biggest hurricane ever.
Oh, I know. Category 6. Now, I've never even knew there was such a category. I thought once you got the 5, you got any bigger, you might as well just give it up. But Category 6, somewhere around South Carolina, I think that's where he was talking on the East Coast, but that's scary in itself.
Oh, it is. And then a schoolboy was just Googling on Google Maps, because I guess his family is planning to go on a trip to this deserted island. And he noticed a cave that, well, basically goes deep into the ground, almost like to the center of the earth. And it hit all the news media. And as fast as it hit the news media, guess what? It just totally disappeared off of Google Maps.
That does not surprise me. You remember 2 years ago when you found an anomaly in Antarctica, and I found one. One of them had pillars. And we went to look back, check on it again, and it was gone, disappeared. It was like it had been wiped out.
Now, that's what happens. The one I found, I know you found the one that looked like a castle pillars in Antarctica. And the one I found, well, with Mary Joyce told me about, is in Antarctica, there was a cave big enough you could fly a 747 into it. And I should have screenshot it. I should have saved it. I should have saved both of them, but, you know, hindsight. You know, when I went to go back to actually screenshot it the next day to put it up on the website, it was gone. It was blacked out where you couldn't go to it.
Yeah, I remember that because you said, you know, maybe there's something wrong with my, maybe I'm doing something wrong, double check. And I looked everywhere, nowhere to be found. And, you know, we've talked to several other people about these kind of anomalies that happen and then disappear, and they've kind of validated what we kind of found out.
Oh, yeah. Well, tonight we're going to have a great guest. We're going to talk about, well, conspiracies. And we're going to talk about what happened on November 22nd, 1963. John F. Kennedy, our president, was assassinated. I was in grade school at the time. I was in a classroom, a portable. And I remember the phone rang. And the teacher picked up the phone, not expecting anything other than maybe sending the kid up there to get the boot on the butt. And she started bawling her head off, and she fell to the floor just crying. And everybody was freaking out because, you know, you're a young kid at that age. You just see somebody, you know, on a phone, and then they're on the floor crying their eyes out. After she composes herself, she could just barely talk. She goes, "Our president is dead. He's been assassinated." And I remember the whole classroom, James, they were crying. You know, everybody was crying. Because, I mean, here you never would think the president of the United States would be assassinated. And, you know, he was a young president. He had a young children. His wife was young, Jackie Kennedy. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, the news that he's been assassinated. And I remember they closed the school. Everybody got to go home. And I tell you, for about a week, that's all you saw on the news media was, you know, about the assassination. Everybody, you know, news media, you know, trying to put it together, how it happened, why it happened. Well, maybe tonight we will get some closure. Maybe what happened to John F. Kennedy? Was it a conspiracy? My gut feeling, it definitely was, because that's why the government is still not releasing all the information about it. So, James, who's our guest tonight?
Well, we're in for a real treat tonight, let me tell you. Our guest is a Mr. Donald Jeffries. Now, he began researching the JFK assassination as a teenager back in the 70s. Now, he is an author of many, many great books. He is also the host of the weekly Donald Jeffries Show. And he also writes regularly for the American Free Press and Substack.
And we'll be right back with our guest. You're listening to Night Dreams Talk Radio. And while we go to commercial, I got my Lipton tea. I'm going to, Lipton tea. I'm drinking it cold tonight. Actually, I didn't brew it. I just put ice water in it with a tea bag and let it sit for a half an hour. And I'll tell you what, no sugar. And it is absolutely fantastic. I've been drinking Lipton tea since I was, in grade school. We'll be back right after this with our guest, Don. So stay tuned.
You know me too well, know me too well. Know me too well. But then again, I might be revealing all I can tell, all I can tell. Honey, all I can tell. Well, I've loved, stolen, cheated. I lied and I lost, so what the hell, baby?
Hi, this is Tom Davis with Metatron Power and Light. Our songs are inspired by our own experiences and the stories of people we've met. We know what we've seen, and we know the truth. We are not alone.
What's unusual about Metatron Power and Light as a band is we share the same beliefs. We've all had similar experiences, and together through music, we can explore the kinds of subjects that haven't been presented in exactly this way before.
From Malmstrom to Manat. We want everyone to know that what you're going through, we're going through. When you're being told one thing and seeing another, we're here with you. Music brings people together, and together we're strong.
from our compound, from the West Coast to the East Coast to worldwide, both on the internet and terrestrial radio, you're listening to Gary Anderson on Night Dreams Talk Radio After Dark.
And we are back. Hi, Don. How are you doing, my friend? Are you there?
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, I just said, how are you doing?
Fine.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, yeah. Well, can you tell the listeners, Don, a little bit about yourself?
Well, as in the introduction indicated, I got my start in the JFK assassination world as a teenager. I worked as a teenage volunteer for Mark Lanes, who was the most high-profile critic of the Warren Commission. He wrote Rush to Judgment, which is a New York Times bestseller. He's probably the best known of all the critics of the Warren Report. He was kind of a mentor to me, my hero. And I was very excited to work for his organization, the Citizens Committee of Inquiry. And we lobbied Congress to try to reopen the investigation, which they did, in the House Select Committee on Assassinations. And I was disillusioned with that, as most other knowledgeable critics of the Warren Report were. But it was a heady experience starting out like that. And I held an interest in the subject for a long time. And it's never, you know, never gone away from me. It's still my wheelhouse issue. But over time, once I realized that we had been lied to so thoroughly about the murder of the President of the United States, it was a baby step to go from there to, you know, RFK assassination, MLK assassination. And then I began looking at other issues, October Surprise and, you know, Waco and Oklahoma City. And those are the things I wrote about in my first nonfiction book, Hidden History, which is still my bestseller and has done really, really well. And then, you know, lauded by people, renowned people all across the political spectrum, from Roger Stone, who wrote a foreword to the paperback edition, to Cynthia McKinney, former member of Congress, Cindy Sheehan, international peace activist, Jesse Ventura, lots of people. But both the left and the right, because I'm an equal opportunity critic of all of them. And I look at all these issues, you know, I hope dispassionately and logically. But the JFK assassination was the first, and it's still probably the closest to my heart of all the things that I've investigated and written about.
You know, what it really upsets me about, I feel there was a major cover-up, and it's still going on. Not just there. When you think about that, and you think about all these other administrations, and Robert Kennedy assassination, and on and on. Even, you know, because we talk about UFOs a lot on here. And even that, to get disclosure from the government, everybody thinks it's around the corner. But you know what? I hate to say it. The government has a tendency of not giving us the information. And is it because they feel that we can't handle it? Or maybe is the administration's that corrupt?
I tend towards the corruption factor there. I you know, one thing I've learned, you know, from studying these issues for so long is that, you know, you see the clear patterns. And of course, I first noticed them in the JFK assassination, where you see the missing evidence, the destroyed evidence, the lost evidence, the failure to follow logical leads. And in the JFK assassination, they had lots of early leads they could have followed. But anything that pointed away from Oswald, they wouldn't go there. Or anything that even pointed towards Oswald and someone else, they wouldn't go there. But you see the same things in the other assassinations, 9/11, Waco, all these things. You see unnatural deaths of witnesses. You know, the JFK assassination body count is most famous because it was the biggest, maybe until the Clintons came along later, but of all of them. But you see that in most of these cases. There's a big body count of, you know, unnatural deaths of witnesses that are connected to these cases. It's scary, but it's a reality. So these are the kind of patterns that emerge, and the withholding of information. For instance, you mentioned earlier, you know, of course, if what we're told is true, that Lee Harvey Oswald, a minimum wage earning defector from Russia, who was this troubled guy, loser, beat his wife, all the things, he was sexually frustrated, maybe hated Kennedy because he was so good looking. We've heard all these excuses, but yet denied that he did it. You know, he wanted notoriety, but he did, much like Sirhan would later too. These people wanted notoriety, but they denied doing it. Strange way to get it. But if this is the case, then why would any information? Why would anything have ever been withheld about the JFK assassination on grounds of national security? There were no national security involved if a lone nut, you know, minimum wage earning guy shot. That's ridiculous. But no one questions this. And, you know, this is history. There are still documents related to the Lincoln assassination that are classified. There's still information about the Jack the Ripper murders in 1888, you know, murders of prostitutes in London. Why would anything be withheld ever? Why are they still being withheld, you know, well over 100 years later? World War I, World War II, all these, there's still files related to all those issues that are still classified. So the tendency, you could say maybe there's just a tendency on the part, this is what they learn, that you cover up, you classify. But I don't think you do that innocently. So I tend to think that our leaders are utterly corrupt, and they promote, you know, the next generation of corrupt people. They pick, you know, their proteges based on, you know, who's going to do the same thing they did, like-minded people. So I think the reason why things don't change is because of that corruption. And I love the quote from James Forrestal, who was Truman's Secretary of Defense, who famously allegedly jumped out of a window at Bethesda Naval Hospital in the late 40s, and most of us think he was pushed. But he famously said to Joe McCarthy, of all people, who was his friend, they said, you know, McCarthy, if this wasn't a huge conspiracy, once in a while they'd make a mistake in our favor. And that's the way I look at it. You know, if there was any random aspect to politics or government, once in a while a great leader would emerge. Someone like John F. Kennedy, who I think could have been that. But when they do, inevitably, like the Kennedys, they're killed. And so I think that, you know, what does that tell you? That tells you that there's no room in this system for leaders who are honest, who want to help people, who want to make things better. Because, I mean, otherwise things wouldn't constantly get worse, and the few good ones that come along would get assassinated or smeared and run out of politics like has happened to other people. So I think that the coincidence theory of history, because there's really only two theories of history. There's either a conspiratorial view, and people, and I have the quotes from both of my conspiracy books from all the leaders, from Benjamin Disraeli, the Prime Minister of England, to Franklin Roosevelt, who famously said, nothing happens in politics by accident. If it happened, you can bet it was planned that way. Even up to like Bill Clinton, all these people talk about people behind the scenes running things, and they're acknowledging they're not in charge, but they're all telling you that this isn't happening by coincidence. It was planned. So conspiracy is kind of a dirty word, you know, but I wear it with honor. I have the definition of, you know, what conspiracy is, and people, and I always tell people, and they say, well, you think everything's a conspiracy. I say, well, yeah, when you're being run by conspirators, that's what they're going to do. This is the only way they know how to do business. It's standard operating procedure for them. They conspire. And I think we've reached a point where things are so corrupt that we're like it was in the 1700s when Jonathan Swift, author of Gulliver's Travels, he famously said that the judges of his day were so corrupt that you couldn't bribe them to do the right thing. And I think that's where we are, our leaders. I think our leaders at all levels are so corrupt now, I don't think you could bribe them to do the right thing. I think they're so committed to doing these horrible things, or just doing the wrong things to screw people over, I don't know that you could bribe them. So, you know, call me cynical, but that's the way I look at the world. And it's not just from my personal experience, but, you know, researching these things, talking to people, and seeing the impact that, you know, things I've, on my own show, I've had whistleblowers from all walks of life, and people, they pay the ultimate price. When you go back to Jim Garrison with the JFK assassination, you know, they lose their families. They're ostracized by their friends and the peers, and they get nothing out of it. They're just doing it because they're courageous and they believe in it, principle. But I don't think that would happen in an honest society. We would herald, you know, we would make heroes out of whistleblowers. But we see what has happened to the three most famous whistleblowers of the modern age. And where are Julian Assange and Edward Snowden and Chelsea Manning? So I think that's unfortunately that, you know, we always, our society punishes those who expose the corruption instead of going and trying to change and stop the corruption.
Oh, yeah, that's the problem. Now, do you know how many people mysteriously died after JFK? People like were in the...
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere. This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
CIA and, you know, all, you know, Secret Service and all the stuff that was involved. How many of them died mysteriously?
Well, there's a, the body count is extensive. I don't think there's a, because it's continued up for decades. But I think within the first 3 years at the assassination, there were 18 witnesses that had, you know, were directly involved in some way that died, and almost all of them were unnatural. Now, some of the natural deaths were people that had heart attacks at very young ages. So, I don't know, is that natural? One of the most famous aspects of that would be the meeting that there were three people who met with Jack Ruby's roommate, George Senator, shortly after Ruby shot Oswald. They met in his apartment. All three of those people, and two of them were news reporters. One of them was a lawyer. The lawyer died of a heart attack at 40-some years old. One of the news reporters was killed by a karate chop to the neck as he exited his shower, believe it or not. Now, I don't know how many people have ever died that way, but outside the world of conspiracies, probably nobody. And the third guy was accidentally shot while he sat in a police – he was covering something in a police station, and one of the cops' gun went off and killed him while he was sitting there. So, I mean, can you even write a script like that? But and that was within within a year and a half or something of that meeting, all three being dead. So what would the odds be of that? Can you calculate it? Again, all of them were under 50. So I think the odds are astronomical. You know, somebody like Dorothy Kilgallen, who was one of the most famous women in the world. If you've older viewers out there who watch the show What's My Line, she was a regular on there.
Oh, yeah.
But she was a gossip columnist, but she was a real good news reporter as well. She actually wrote, and she was really about the only news reporter in the mainstream media that was going after the JFK assassination story. She was writing about it constantly. She had the only private interview with Jack Ruby during his trial. And she was telling everybody, including Mark Lane, that she was going to break this case wide open. She was working on a book. It would have been the first, probably the biggest book on the Warren Report. And her notes would never be found, by the way. But she died very suspiciously. And again, I've gone over her death into my writing. Lots of reasons. There's no reason at all to believe that she, you know, killed herself or was accidental. And, you know, you can read, I don't want to go into it there, but there, again, everything about the crime scene was staged. It was nothing about her. She was still wearing her wig. All these things she didn't do when she went to bed. But she was only like 52 or something like that. But for good measure, her best friend, who just happened to be, her name I think was Edith Smith, she just happened to be one of JFK's alleged former lovers. And she was best friend of Dorothy Kilgallen, and Penn Jones and some other critics believe that she entrusted her files to and said, you know, told her where they were if anything happened to her. Get my files in the JFK assassination. That woman, her friend, died like 2 days later. Again, very mysteriously, unnaturally. And then Dorothy Kilgallen's husband, I different sources say, but it looks like he probably killed himself, and it was not that many years later either. So, you know, are the odds that three people close together involved in something like, including a very prominent journalist like Dorothy Kilgallen. But those are just some. There's lots of other ones, you know, falls from high-rise buildings and things like that, motorcycle accidents, car crashes, plane crashes, you know, the kind of thing that anybody who's read about the Clinton body count, the kind of thing you see there. These are unnatural deaths. Very suspect suicides and murders and most people don't die that way. But if you're connected in some way to the JFK assassination or 9/11 or one of these other issues, or the Clintons even, or the Bushes, or any of the body counts, unfortunately, it happens all too often.
Oh, yeah. And going back, even Johnson was, people noted that Johnson was saying that Kennedy had to go before, you know, about a week before the assassination. He was, I guess, saying that he had to be removed. He had to be gone. And do you know, can you tell us anything about that?
Well, he famously told his alleged mistress at the time, Madeleine Brown, that those Kennedys are never going to, you know, they're never going to embarrass me again or something. Now, you know, I believe LBJ certainly had foreknowledge of the event, but I don't, some people believe he orchestrated. I don't think any politician has the power to do that. So I think that this was, it happened at levels above him, but he certainly approved of it. I think he was happy about it because he was, you know, tremendously ambitious. He wanted to be president. He didn't care. And LBJ had a body count too, and I go over that in Hidden History as well. And, you know, there are people that believe he had his own sister murdered, Josepha Johnson. You know, he was a really disreputable character. He had a guy named Mack Wallace who basically was his personal hitman. And there's some evidence that Mack Wallace's thumbprint was found on a box on the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository where Oswald worked and where they claim the shots came from. That people have argued against that in recent years. Who knows? But at any rate, he had this guy who was lots of very strange deaths of people associated to LBJ. And people can I have them all listed in Hidden History. But I don't think he orchestrated it. I think he certainly benefited from it. And you can tell, you know, one of the things that first made me suspicious, even as a little kid, because we were a Catholic family. And so we were probably more distraught than most Catholic families were probably even more distraught because JFK was the first Catholic and he was one of us. And all my relatives, if I heard any speculation at all, as we were watching the nonstop coverage of the funeral and the reports and everything, as a little kid, as a 7-year-old, I absorbed that, and it became one of my, you know, most powerful memories of my childhood. Some of the first memories I have are that. But I also heard the adults, you know, saying, you know, and so many of them were saying Johnson did it because they hated Johnson because he was this crude Southerner and probably hated Catholics, you know. And so I think that was the first natural person because he acted so suspiciously. And this is what really the famous feud between LBJ and Robert F. Kennedy really started on the day of the assassination because they didn't like each other before that, but RFK despised him after that because his behavior was so crude and so over the top. He lied about a phone call. He claimed Bobby Kennedy had told him to take the oath of office on Air Force One before he left Dallas, which he said no such thing, and he didn't need to do that because the Constitution automatically made him president. And famously, people have seen that picture in Air Force One where he was a sadist. If you've seen pictures of LBJ, he used to hold his hound dogs up by the ears for photographers. He was a genuine sadist. And he, in a sadistic move, he forced Jackie Kennedy, with the blood still on her pink dress from her husband, to stand next to him in a daze while he took the oath of office. And you can see the kind of half smile on his face, and you can see a goofy-looking Lady Bird Johnson. She can't keep the smile off her face. I mean, it's talk about it, inappropriate. And then, of course, at one point, caught on camera is Congressman Albert Thomas, a good old boy from Texas, who is a Johnson crony, who LBJ turns and is probably winking at him because the camera catches Thomas winking at LBJ during the... So, I mean, these are the kind of things that just... And just the fact he sounded so insincere, he just looked like the cat that ate the canary.
Well, you know, so I think we need to take a break here. It's going on the bottom of the hour. But I'll tell you one thing. I think he knew all about the assassination. He knew it was going to go down. He probably, you know, condoned it. I'm sure he was explained what was going to go on, and he could have put his foot down and said, no, we can't have it happen. He probably went along with it because he hated JFK with a passion. And we'll be back with Don. You're listening to Night Dreams Talk Radio.
started shaking, stood steady as they tumbled down. Kept your head through the falling and breaking. When others stumbled, you stood your ground. You knew that hoping could leave you wide open to the dangerous changes in stranger days to come. Darkness grows in the mist and shadows. Puppets pose and deeds betray. There are myths that persist, and we all know words can keep the truth at bay. You know that open will leave you wide open. Fear closes in, and heroes don't always win. When you are ready to hold the line, defended on all sides, till little by little the middle was hard to find. Forget about the life you thought you'd be living. Forget about the world you left behind. When you thought you could fly, now you're trapped inside
the chrysalis.
Do you have a paranormal story you want to share on Night Dreams Talk Radio? You could be a guest. Email us at nightdreamstalkradio@gmail.com.
You can advertise your business on Night Dreams Talk Radio, and you will be heard worldwide. Why not contact us at nightdreamstalkradio@gmail.com? You are listening to Night Dreams Talk Radio Network, from our compound to you worldwide, with your host, Gary Anderson.
And we are back with Dawn. You know, again, you know, it's been rumors that, you know, like I mentioned earlier on the show, that LBJ said that JFK had to go. I know he knew exactly what was going on. There, you know.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Oh, again, Oswell. I mean, realistically, with the type of gun he had, the rifle he had, the location, to be able to take out the president in that limousine, I just don't buy it. And even if he was a marksman, the angle of it. And then when he was in the hospital, it seems like the doctors manipulated the wound. And that is more upsetting yet. Can you go there?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, again, it doesn't... It took me as a teenager, I don't know, reading a few of the first critical books, Rush to Judgment by Mark Lane, Accessories After the Fact by Sylvia Marr, Whitewashed by Harold Weisberg, because these people, again, none of them were journalists. And that's, if there's a subtext to everything I write about, is my books wouldn't be possible if we actually had a free press with investigative journalists. We don't. The mainstream, the only investigative journalists you have are people like me and others that are on the internet with podcasts and radio shows and who are writing books like mine that I'm fortunate enough to have gotten published. A lot of people can't get these things published. I've been lucky. But if you look at the evidence, the ballistics certainly, and when I was a teenager, I got to go to the National Archives. I got to hold the alleged rifle in my hand, the magic bullet. I saw the president's clothes. I had a very heady experience for 18-year-old, and I got to sit in a private room, and they ran the Zapruder film for me, and I got to go frame by frame. I could stop it as much as I wanted and analyze things. So it was pretty cool stuff for an 18-year-old. But I know the evidence inside out, and I knew it then. But all you need to know is that they tell you that the government tells you that Oswald's alleged weapon, and again, it's a long story, but it's never been conclusively tied to Lee Harvey Oswald, And in fact, the best evidence shows that it was a completely different weapon found on the sixth floor, because the two deputies had found the alleged rifle on the sixth floor, Boone and Weitzman, one of whom, Weitzman, later ended up in a mental institution. He basically went crazy from what he went through that day. And his life was never the same. The House Assassinations Committee found him in a mental institution. But they both signed sworn affidavits identifying the rifle as a German Mauser. Now, Oswald's alleged rifle, which, again, was never really been conclusively tied to him, was an Italian Mannlicher Carcano. As Mark Lane told the Warren Commission when he testified for them, "Gentlemen, I don't have to be an expert in weapons, but I can tell this isn't a German-made rifle because stamped on the barrel is made in Italy." So clearly they didn't make the mistake that a lot of people, even some critics, think. And if Oswald had gone to court, if I had been his attorney, the first thing I would have done would be to introduce those affidavits into the record. Say, "Your Honor, I move for a dismissal of the trial, the murder weapon, the alleged murder weapon. There's no chain of possession for it. And the only legal documentation for its admission into the record says that it's a German Mauser." So, and that would not have happened, because there are very few honest courtrooms now, and there were very few then. So that wouldn't have happened, but that's the way it should have been. So there's reason to doubt that it was even the weapon. The weapon was old. It was a laughingstock. They used to say that it was the Italians were humanitarians for using it in World War II.
Oh, you're right.
It was very cheap. The scope was defective. They had a problem with it where the shims would fly up. So before it could even be test fired by riflemen who were much better shots than Oswald ever was, genuine experts, they demanded that it be fixed because they were afraid something would fly up and hit him in the face. But even then, they could never duplicate his feet. But all you have to do is look at the president's clothes. And the bullet hole entered in his back about 5.5 to 6 inches below the shoulder on the right-hand side. Corresponding hole in the shirt, about the same amount. And those bullet holes, again, you're talking about Oswald was shooting from a sixth floor, an elevated position, six floors above the motorcade. So a bit of downward trajectory. So how does a bullet entering 5.5 to 6 inches below? There's nothing better in documentation than bullet holes, folks. I mean, I don't know what could be better evidence than that. How does it possibly exit out his throat and then go on into Governor Connally and do all the crazy impossible?
Impossible.
Obviously cannot. And not only that, that location is backed up by the autopsy face sheet by Dr. Boswell, who originally marked it there and then later said he made a mistake in that location, again, at the third thoracic vertebra. It's the exact same location where Admiral Berkeley, the president's personal physician, located on the death certificate, and it's the location where FBI agents Sibbert and O'Neill described when they were at the autopsy. So documentation is complete. That's where the wound was. No, the Warren Commission, Gerald Ford, as a matter of fact, was the one who did it. Where they moved the wound, they just moved the bullet wound up, and even though they moved it up, it still wasn't high enough to possibly have exited from his throat. But it made it a little more palatable. So it's impossible, because that wound had to have caused seven. Those bullet holes and that particular bullet had to be responsible for causing seven wounds in the president and Governor John Connally, who's sitting in front of him, for the lone assassin thesis to work, because they test fired Oswald's gun, alleged gun, and they found it could not fire three shots in 6.5 or so seconds, which is what the elapsed time was of the shooting, according to the narrative. So they had to, Arlen Specter, who later became a longtime senator from Pennsylvania, at that time was a junior counsel, very active junior counsel on the Warren Commission. He postulated that this is what happened. It was a single bullet theory, you see. And even though the bullet they had, if you've ever seen the magic bullet, it's identical to the same ammunition. And you can find it in the Warren Commission's records and hearings and exhibits. You'll see the test fired bullets of the same ammunition. You can see what one looks like that was fired into a wrist, which is this bullet supposedly shattered John Connally's wrist. It looks very deformed. You can see the same bullet fired into cotton wadding. That's what CE-399, the magic bullet, looks like. It looks like it was fired into cotton wadding. Yet they're telling you it created seven wounds. It went on a path that was impossible in terms of the velocity, and not to mention the problem with the trajectory. But this is what they this the entire case is based on, that because without those you can't have a separate bullet. So you can't have Connally getting hit by a separate bullet and JFK getting hit by a bullet, because you also have the bullet that they claim missed and hit the pavement, and there was a mark on the pavement, and it struck spectator James Tague and caused a little a superficial wound to his cheek. So there were too many bullets there to account for Oswald's weapon, so thus the need to come up with a single bullet theory. But that doesn't stop, you know, even people like John Connally, who for decades said, you know, the same bullet didn't hit him, but he still claimed Oswald did it. And again, because no journalists were investigating this outside of people, citizen journalists, there was nobody that are saying, well, Governor, that's impossible. There couldn't have been a lone assassin because the gun couldn't fire that fast. But nobody ever does that. They just nod because he's saying Oswald did it. That's all that counts. And there were other people that said that as well. But ballistically, the wounds don't match up. And then you have the throat wound, which was reported as a wound of entrance by Malcolm Perry early on at his press conference. And, of course, those tapes have been lost, but it was seen initially. We have transcripts of it, though. And we have lots of anecdotal evidence that, of course, it was an entrance wound to the throat. That means it couldn't have been Oswald. It was somebody who was shooting from the front, not behind. And very important that they changed that. So they did a tracheotomy, and it's understandable they did a tracheotomy to try to get the president to breathe through the throat wound. But they obliterated the wound in the process. So all we can go by is what Perry said and then what happened afterwards. And he described to several people behind the scenes. He talked about being pressured. He talked about the doctors at Bethesda Naval Hospital, the sham of an autopsy, as Harold Weisberg called it was an autopsy unworthy of a Bowery bum. When that was conducted that night, the doctors and FBI agents, they were all badgering Perry to change and say this could not have been an entrance wound because, you know, their theory depended on it. And eventually, a Secret Service agent, Elmer Moore, came and just later felt guilty about the pressure they put on him. But that's what was happening at that time. The doctors had held their ground, and you had the doctors at Parkland Hospital who every one of them to a T, and the nurses as well, described a huge blowout in the back of JFK's head. And again, that's consistent with an exit wound, not an entrance wound. So, and if you look at the official autopsy photos and x-rays that are in the record today, it doesn't show that big blowout. So obviously they can't be legitimate, or every single one of those doctors and nurses was mistaken or lying in the exact same manner. And I don't believe that. And again, I think this is why, you know, if you look at the evidence,
from what I've done too, part of the back of his head was missing. So yes. I mean, they in brain matter was showing. So and actually brain matter was missing also. And so how could it? Again, that's this major cover-up. Now, was the Secret Service involved with it, along with the CIA, and who else? Because they're the only ones that could have pulled this off.
Yeah, well, I think, and the people ask me all the time, who killed Kennedy? Well, I don't theorize at all. That's why people call me conspiracy theorists. If you can find a theory in what I'm writing, tell me what it is. These are not theories. These are facts. And I'm just telling you, being lied to. So whoever killed Kennedy, one thing I can say for sure is that it wasn't Lee Harvey Oswald. So they inadvertently proved that conclusively. Their lack of an investigation showed that whoever did it, it wasn't Oswald.
Now, Oswald, wasn't he tied into a low-level recruited by the CIA at one point, and they tried to whitewash that?
Yeah, well, yes, they did. He was an FBI informant as well. But they, most of us, well, not most of us, I can't say that, but I certainly believe what Jim Garrison believed. Jim Garrison believed that Oswald was some kind of an undercover operative for some agency, maybe the CIA, maybe the FBI, Naval Intelligence, we don't know. But somebody, I think probably FBI. And that he was on assignment at the time of the assassination, and his assignment was to infiltrate a group that he was told was possibly planning to kill the president. And that group included the people that we've come to know from Oliver Stone's movie, JFK, David Ferry, Clay Shaw, Jack Ruby, a lot of the anti-Castro Cubans. Oswald interacted.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With all of them, they covered up the connections between Oswald and Ruby, and there was plenty. He had been at Oswald's Ruby's Carousel Club plenty of times. In fact, one of the women they later killed said that they were lovers. You know, because a lot of the people in this are, it's very strange too. There's a lot of gay people, and I don't know what was going on there, but there's a lot of them that are. Clay Shaw certainly was, David Ferry. But I believe personally, this is my, and I don't know if Garrison believed that. I think though all those people that level, with the possible exception of Shaw, I think he may be in the connection to the higher ups. But I think all the others were being manipulated as well. I think they, and Ruby, there's an indication Ruby had been an FBI informant. Ferry had governmental connections, so they may have all been informants of one type or another. Maybe they're all informing on each other. I don't know, but Oswald was chosen to be the patsy, clearly. And again, I'm writing Hidden History 3 now as we speak. So, and I'm going to have a lot more about this, but there's a lot in the record that demonstrate there's evidence for this, that Oswald was providing weekly information to FBI agent James Hostie. As his informant, and it was about the potential plot to kill the president. And you know, very, very famously in the 70s, it came to light that an incriminating note or threatening note from Lee Harvey Oswald had been flushed down the toilet by James Hostie, and he just claimed, well, it was a note saying you stop bothering my wife, because Hostie had been to their house. Well, Taken into context, looking at the evidence, what that was about, I believe, is that Hostie hadn't heard from Oswald for whatever reason. Nobody knows what was happening. There's also evidence that Oswald was the one who stopped the plot to kill JFK in Chicago, which was earlier that month. And I go into that in Hidden History 3 as well, that someone named Lee from the FBI supposedly put in a tip that, hey, they're planning to kill the JFK at the Army-Navy game in Soldier Field. And a lot of people think that was Lee. And then later there was a teletype of the JFK assassination where someone, an informant, was warning about a plot to kill JFK in Dallas. A lot of us think that was Oswald too. So it may be that he was flipping the plan at that time, and that maybe that's why he wasn't talking to Hostie. I don't know. But I think that that's why Hostie, he didn't go there to threaten Marina or harass her. I think he went there to see what was going on. How come I haven't heard from him? That's what I personally believe, and I don't think for a second that note had – I think the note was obviously – had a very different meaning to it and would have been a lot more incriminating and maybe would have provided some more light on the plot. But I think that Oswald, that's what his role was at the time. I think that's why he looked so flustered after he was arrested. I think he had been betrayed. He was trying to figure it out, and I think he didn't really know. He kept asking for a lawyer. And but they wouldn't give him one. And then to show you how deep this rabbit hole runs, and I talked about this in history, two different people, one from the Dallas Bar Association, one from the ACLU, who visited Oswald. One of them got to see Oswald. Another one, I think, just communicated with him. But they both claim that Oswald said he was satisfied and don't worry about getting him an attorney. Well, all you have to do is look at that midnight press conference where he shows up with the black eye and says, I do request someone to step forward and give me legal representation. These people who give me a hearing without any representation or anything, I want a lawyer. That's when he was in the hallways, that's what he was saying. He said, I'm a patsy once. He said, I didn't do it a couple times, and they asked him. But his main message was, I want a lawyer. So those two people, the American Bar Association and ACLU, and the other critics don't approach this like I do. They're liars. And that's the kind of people you talk to. Because there's no way he was telling them he didn't want a lawyer, and he's publicly saying, that's the first thing on my mind, I want a lawyer. So That's why this thing is so deep. When you look at it that way, that all these people are lying, and it's constructive. They're a false negative. And whatever Oswald was, I don't know that he was a hero, but he was set up for whatever reason to take the fall. He was assassinated himself by Jack Ruby, and how they got Jack Ruby to do that, I don't know.
Well, didn't Jack Ruby have terminal cancer or something too?
Well, a couple of years later he did, and he got it very quickly. I don't think he did at that time. But there's some indication that he may have been an early hypno kind of programmed assassin, as Sirhan Sirhan almost certainly was. Because if you look at the tape that happened, you'll hear right before Ruby jumps out of the crowd and goes up and shoots Oswald, a car, there's a beep of a horn, very distinctive. And that's the kind of thing, you know, studying the Manchurian Candidate and MKUltra and all that, that's the kind of thing you find in those programs that they need. Something like that, it's a triggering mechanism. So that could easily have triggered him, because he certainly, you know, he just jumped right after that and shot him. And, of course, all the 70 police officers in the basement and nobody in Oswald's front. And again, that's the kind of thing that if you look at it, you know, I don't think the Dallas police was behind the assassination, but they certainly made Oswald's death possible because they didn't protect him. And you have to question why. This is the most prized prisoner they'd ever had. You know, he should have been completely surrounded so that no one could have possibly done anything to him.
Is it possible, Don, that they were alerted that they were going to take Oswald out and not to interfere, and they set it up for it to happen?
Well, I don't know what the other explanation there would be. I mean, they're dumbest good old boys in the history of the world. But these people, they live long lives and they're proud of it. Jim Lovell was one of the guys who, with the big white hat, who was sat there and let it happen. He just died last year at 99, and he talked and lectured about it forever. And a lot of the critics were way too kind to him. Because, you know, you let this happen, much as they're too kind to the Secret Service. You mentioned them earlier before, and I go out to the Secret Service all the time. Because if you're conducting a real investigation of what happened in the JFK, the first people you'd go after, the most obvious people whose behavior was suspect, were the Secret Service agents. They did absolutely nothing. They had about 6.5 seconds or so to react. They reacted. They literally did nothing. The driver of the car, William Greer, who was not JFK's regular driver, and later in an interview with Vince Palarama, who has done some great work on the Secret Service and the JFK assassination, his son basically told Palarama that my father was, we're Presbyterians and JFK was a Catholic. He basically told him he didn't like him. And the fact that he slowed the car down, or 57 witnesses said stop the car, and you can sort of see the brake lights come on. It's not the way they're trained when they hear gunfire. He should have been hit. He should have hit the accelerator and been out of there as quickly as he could. He would have saved JFK's life, because he wasn't killed until the headshot 6.5 seconds later. He did nothing. Roy Kellerman, sitting in front, who was in charge of the detail there, he did absolutely nothing. He was trained to jump over the middle seat and throw his body over JFK's, which Rufus Youngblood did to LBJ. You know, LBJ's Secret Service reacted right away. He completely camouflaged LBJ right away, so there was no danger for him. But JFK's Secret Service did nothing. The follow up car, which was very close, riding behind, nobody jumped until Clint Hill very belatedly did after the headshot. His life could have been saved easily. So that's what you would do in a real investigation. You would call his entire Secret Service in detail. And that's when you would find out that a bunch of them had been out drinking the night before to all hours of the evening in a complete breach of protocol. You'd find that out. You'd find Emory Roberts, who mysteriously was in charge of the detail that day. He waved off a Secret Service agent at Love Field, and you can see film of that if you've seen the agent shrug and say, what's going on? What? You know, and because he's starting to jog alongside the limousine, which if you look at previous motorcades, typically there was a Secret Service agent on either side of the car that jogged alongside the car.
Right.
In this case, there wasn't. And the motorcycles were drawn back again, making JFK a completely open target. Everything about security that day was suspect, and the Secret Service, they did not want the Dallas police. They had orders not to help. So I mean this and not to and the press can even talk about something like the film coverage. Why we have to rely on Abraham Zapruder, the home movie, and Orwell Nix, Marie Muchmore. Those are the three home movies we know. There, and of course, there's the Babushka Lady film, who you can see her with the big hat on, who's filming and would have had the best view of the assassination. No, she's never been conclusively identified, and her film's never been seen because the authorities didn't want footage of it. And in fact, they did everything to stop it. And that's why I believe the press car, which in all the other motorcades typically was in front, you know, of the presidential limousine. So it got a nice view, you know, head on view of the president. In this case, they were on a bus several cars back. So that's why when you see you don't see any professional footage of JFK's motorcade. It stops at Love Field, and then they get on the bus, and you don't see anything else again until you see that first cameraman that gets out, and he's running, and you have the wave, crazed footage where you see the people on the grass and stuff. That's because he was running from the bus, and otherwise we had to rely on amateur people who had just were taking home movies there. Otherwise we wouldn't know anything. But I think it's very suspect that there's no professional footage, because all other parts of JFK's film trip to Texas was documented by professional film. And just imagine if that press car had been where it always was before, if it was right in front of the limousine, and its cameras trained on JFK. I mean, I think you'd have a real idea of which way the bullets came from, and you'd be able to figure it out a lot easier. So those are the kind of questions that I think people should ask. But for some reason, even a lot of the critics, they don't like to point at the Secret Service, but those are the first people I would point at, and I would demand answers from them. So I think the Secret Service, and of course the Secret Service later, subsequently, basically stole JFK's body. At the time, most people don't realize that the assassination of a president was not a federal crime. Later, it became one, but at that time, it was a local murder like anybody else. So Dallas, Texas had the jurisdiction. They should have had jurisdiction over the body. The autopsy should have been done there. And the medical examiner physically tried to stop the Secret Service from taking it. They shoved him aside. They held him off at gunpoint. And they just took his body out. And it was portrayed heroically that, you know, they hated Dallas so much and what it had done to the president that they had to get out of there as quickly as possible. And that's ridiculous. It's not legal, and the Secret Service was front and center there. And the Secret Service, as late as the 1990s, when the Assassination Records and Review Board was trying to get information, the Secret Service destroyed a bunch of records at that time. So they were still suspects. So my list of suspects begins with the Secret Service. I mean, I don't think they were the main movers behind it. But the assassination would not have been possible without them, and their behavior has been suspect for decades.
I agree. I mean, you know, in the report, there was a gunshot supposedly on a mound, you know, grassy mound, which really would have been the right angle to have taken the president out, not up, you know, in that building. I mean, a lot of these things just don't compute. But again, why would the government lock this information up where they don't want to reveal it? Is it because they don't want to look dirty?
Sure. Well, I think I think the answer is pretty obvious. If it made their case, if the evidence solidified the notion that Lee Harvey Oswald did it alone, it would all be out there. Anything that they're hiding obviously contradicts that notion, or as you say, makes them look dirty. And I think they obviously were dirty, and there's a lot there to make them, to look guilty. We know, what the CIA was doing in other countries, and we know the CIA was at war with Kennedy, and Kennedy was at war with them. He threatened to shatter to a million pieces behind the scenes, and in fact, he was very seriously considering abolishing the CIA. And keep in mind, after the Bay of Pigs, where he was betrayed as a new young president, they took advantage of his naivety and made him look bad. He fired Alan Dulles, who was a very powerful figure, the director of the CIA, and he fired Charles Cabell, and he fired Richard Bissell, the top three officials in the CIA. He fired them afterwards, and Dulles and of course Dulles would later become the most active member of the Warren Commission. So you think he had a an axe to grind, and Charles Cabell, the other guy he fired, his brother Earl Cabell, was the mayor of Texas, mayor of Dallas, during the, at the time of the assassination. And we found one of the few relevant files that were released a couple years ago during the Trump administration revealed what we probably already knew, that Earl Cabell, the mayor of Dallas, was a CIA asset as well. So these, you know, these connections are everywhere. And I think to try to figure out like who were, I think Oliver Stone got it essentially right. You know, when he has Mr. X, who was based on Fletcher Prouty, a great researcher played by Donald Sutherland in the movie, when he says, you know, something's in the wind. You know, all these forces got together. There's people like Curtis LeMay and others in the Pentagon who hated JFK and certainly would have approved of his assassination. People in the CIA obviously hated and would have approved his assassination. A lot of the big oil interest would have. J. Edgar Hoover hated him, and the FBI hated him. Lyndon Johnson hated him. The mob hated him. So, I mean, I think just a consortium of these forces came together, and it was in all their best interest to do this. And they had the press in their pocket. I mean, it could not have happened if you had any outlets, if one of the television networks was honest, if New York Times, Washington Post, if they had, you know, would investigate this. None of them did any investigating at all. The only reason we know any of this stuff is because citizen journalists long before me read those 26 volumes of hearings and exhibits and saw how ridiculous they were, how awful the evidence, so-called evidence was, and how it contradicted their conclusions. And they wrote books on it that people like me read as youngsters. And then later, when I started doing my own research, I went and read those 26 volumes myself. And they're not easy reading. And you see that the critics got it right. I mean, that investigation has to be seen or read to be believed, because you can just sit there and watch as you're reading page after page of irrelevant testimony to people that most of the witnesses are irrelevant, and they didn't call many of the important witnesses who should have been called, or identify people like the Umbrella Man and the Babushka Lady, people that probably were conspirators or suspicious characters anyhow. Instead, they talked to people that had known Oswald as a kid, or Oswald's babysitter, or, you know, the crazy stuff like that had no relevance at all. And they would talk, you know, they would talk to them for page after page. Where did you go to school? Where did you work? Tell us where you got married. And you can just look at the record being padded, and then they would brag about how big their record was. Well, it wasn't big. It was full of irrelevant material.
Well, and so it was basically all deception. We need to take a break, Don. When you come back, can we switch over now to what happened on the Twin Towers?
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll be back with Don. You're listening to Night Dreams Talk Radio. We'll be back in a flash.
Borealis, starlit crown, arches over the Puget Sound, Berenice's hair drapes her.
Bring on the night with Night Dreams Talk Radio with Gary Anderson.
You want to answer that, don't you? I bet it's just killing you seeing the soft glow just inches away. Someone wants to tell you something or ask you something. Oh, come on, answer it already! Just so we're clear, that wasn't my fault. Next time, ignore your inner voice. Don't text and drive. A message from Florida's Trusted Choice Independent Insurance Agents.
From the compound in beautiful Gig Harbor, Washington, Night Dreams Talk Radio presents your host, Gary Anderson.
And we are back with a great guest tonight, Don. Hey, how can they find your show?
Well, it's the Donald Jeffrey Show, and it airs on Ocelli.com. And also, it airs on the Jeff Rentz Network on a delayed basis, America Plugged Radio, and a couple of some terrestrial radio stations. They air it on a delayed basis, probably in the middle of the night. But it's every Wednesday from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Ocelli.com. And it's we had some good guests. Last week, I had Paul Schrade, a 96-year-old witness who was actually shot along with Robert F. Kennedy back in 1968 in the Ambassador Hotel, still very lucid, and also one of Sirhan's lawyers as well. So we have some good guests. We've had Richard Gage from Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, which I guess we're going to talk about that now. But I'm easy to find. If you Google Donald Jeffries, you're going to find probably more than you want to know about me.
Okay. Have you been worried about being taken out, being so open?
Well, it's people ask me. I really have never been. I don't really get threats. I mean, I get a lot of trolls that that follow me on social media and my blog. They come on my blog a lot, but I don't think you can worry about that, because certainly what I write about, so many people have been taken out and that maybe have done less than I have. But I think if you worry about that, then you're not going to do it. And if things are that bad, and I think unfortunately they are that bad, then we've already lost anyhow. So I mean, somebody has to try to wake the people up to these things, because the corruption is everywhere. You're being lied to all the time. So I'm going to try to do it, and hopefully they don't take me out. But I mean, it's probably nothing I could do to stop it, but I'm not going to change and start back off and just start promoting lies.
Well, tell us what you're feeling about the whole Twin Tower event.
Well, we're coming up on the 20th anniversary, so it's appropriate. Certainly, it's relevant. I think the 9/11 is to the millennials, maybe the Gen Xers too, as to the JFK assassination was the baby boomers. Just a seminal event in their life. And I think 9/11 kind of maybe was a culmination of all those years of corruption and crimes and unpunished leaders, going about and doing basically the swamp remaining full. Deep state villains running free no matter what they did. I think it was a culmination of that, because it was a huge psyop. I think that there's, to believe that 19 crazed Arabs did all that with box cutters and knives, I think it's preposterous. And everything about the story, and again, you just look at the Twin Towers, before 9/11, no high-rise steel frame building in the world had ever collapsed from fire. On that day, three did, including Building 7, which was struck by no airplane, and they couldn't concoct a magical jet fuel cocktail to explain it. So there is no explanation for Building 7. All three, if you look at them, certainly looked like controlled demolitions. They came down in their own footprint. They pancaked down, and then it's all happened in Hidden History 3. And I certainly wrote a lot about this in Hidden History, in Hidden History 1 as well. That tons and tons of people, witnesses, a lot of firefighters, so many people reported explosions. I mean, this was
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where
prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+. This was in all the testimony, if you read it. And later, of course, some of them backed off when they realized, much as somebody testifying to shots from the front in the JFK assassination quickly learned the error of their ways. But first impressions are the best and are the most important. Anybody, criminal investigator, will tell you that. Clearly, there were explosions. I think there's no other explanation for what happened. So I think they were brought that down. And if you look at the Pentagon, just as crazy, because, again, if you look at the entrance to whatever hit the Pentagon, it couldn't have been that jet aircraft, because if you people have online, no professional journalist is going to touch this. They've juxtaposed the plane actual size against the hole, and you can see the entrance hole is not big enough, and there's no impact point for the wings. And the wings were not sheared off and left outside on the ground. In fact, all the early pictures and videos showed no wreckage outside. Now, later they came up with a few little pieces here and there, but there should have been full wings out there, because there was no point of impact in the building, so they should have been sheared off. They weren't, and so that's why you have speculation that a missile hit it or whatever. I don't know why that would be, but of course you have the curious example of, even in 2001, the Pentagon had security cameras everywhere. So whatever hit the Pentagon, we should have had it, you know, 100 angles of it. Instead, we have nothing. They confiscated the video, the security tapes from the DoubleTree Motel across the street,
right,
and the Citgo gas station. So then they belatedly produced some ridiculous video that shows a fireball. You don't even know what hit it. You can't see anything but the fireball. That's not satisfying to anybody, and it certainly flies in the face of all the evidence. I mean, it's ridiculous to believe that we would have all these camera angles and lots of good video, but this is what they expect you to believe. So for those things alone, even beyond that, and the way that the things they tell you, what the temperature got up to in the World Trade Center, it was nowhere near as hot as what they tell you is necessary for steel to melt, and yet they still claim steel melted. So, but again, there nobody asked these questions. Spike Lee got in hot water this week just for some HBO special he's having about 9/11 and everything, and he merely had a few snippets from so-called conspiracy theorists like the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. And the world came crashing down. And this proud, arrogant guy who acts so tough, he backed down like a wounded puppy dog very quickly. And that was their only chance to see anything alternative, because I can guarantee you, I don't have to watch any of the television specials for the 20th anniversary, because I saw the 10th and the 15th anniversaries. It's going to be the same nonsense. It's going to be the same emotional stories of heroism and last phone calls and tear-jerking stories of tragedy. There's not going to be any analysis of the evidence. There never is. And again, I think that's why people have every right to question it, because 9/11, even more than JFK, there was at least some some critics like Mark Lane and Cyril Weck, a few people got on television here or there. They would have them on these specials and give them, of course, it was always, you know, geared to Oswald did it, and that's what the program would always conclude, but they gave the critics a say here or there, so they got to say a few things. Nobody, you're not going to see any critic. You saw what happened when Spike Lee tried to have a few of them in his HBO special. It's not going to be allowed. So all dissent on 9/11 is completely crushed, even though the last I saw in 2016, 54.3% of Americans doubt at least some portion of the official story of 9/11. So if a majority of Americans are doubting it, the news coverage ought to reflect that, but it doesn't, because we don't have any more representation in our news coverage than we do in our political representatives.
Well, here's the thing, too. From some of the research I did, there were people working in those basements, and yes, a speculation that they were putting explosives to take the tower down.
Yes, absolutely. And you have people like William Rodriguez, who is a genuine hero, who heard and described explosions and damage, and other people as well, in the sub-basements. Now, this is, keep in mind, we're told that, you know, the plane supposedly impacted 80-some floors above. How would anything be happening in the sub-basement? But you also have the Naudet brothers, the French filmmakers, who very curiously and perhaps suspiciously in the eyes of some, just happened to pan up just in time to get the only view of the plane hitting the North Tower live. They ran over to the North Tower lobby, and they described seeing, you know, and they filmed. You know, it looked horrible in the lobby. I mean, there was a burned out everything, and they claimed they didn't film some people that were burned alive and stuff. It's like, how would that happen? 80 floors above, why would anything be going on in the lobby? But there, of course, there, unless of course there were explosives, which that's what most of us believe. And the same thing happened in the basement and the sub basement. So yeah, there's every reason to question everything about that day. But again, there was no investigation done whatsoever. And when I was writing Hidden History, I talked to Scott Forbes, who worked in the Twin Towers. And he was still genuinely fearing for his life, you know, all those years later. That was probably 2012, 13, 14, whatever. So over a decade later, he had moved to England. And you could sense the fear in his voice. And he told me that they weren't there that day because for whatever reason, his group was off that day, fortunately. But they were all suspicious, especially after it happened, because they had been watching in the time period just before the event all these curious things that were happening, that with all these mysterious power outages, mysterious construction going on, security cameras not working, all these things for the first time that never happened since he'd been there for many years. So, you know, a naive guy like a lot of these people are, he thinks the authorities want, you know, they would like this information, right? They're trying to find out what happened, right? So he goes to the New York Port Authority, no interest. He goes to the police department, no interest. FBI, no interest. 9/11 Commission comes out, so he goes and tries to tell the story to them. They're not interested in the story at all. And in fact, the 9/11 Commission, just like the Warren Commission, when they wrote their report, they briefly addressed that and say, you know, there were some rumors about power outages and stuff. And we investigated, there was nothing to them. So again, that's what, you know, really hurts me the most is when I'm saying that you're talking to people that nobody knows better what was going on there than Scott Forbes and his group. They worked there. This was their work environment. So that'd be like telling you that, you know, if you work at wherever you work, if you work in an office or a store or whatever, and you say, well, you know, somebody came in, you know, there are all these people that came in the other day and they just, you know, they started rolling around on the floor and, you know, talking in tongues or, you know, something strange. But you would be the only one that would know that. And all the other people around you, yeah, that was crazy, you know, and you tried to tell the authorities, no, and they just wrote a report about it. No, nothing happened. That's at the level of that you're just completely dismissing the only witnesses that would know that. But I'm sure that there are other stories that we don't even know about like that. But just investigating this, it doesn't take much time. There's so many things. There are the calls from the plane, which apparently were impossible, and the let's roll thing with the Flight 93, which, again, just the fact that these planes were flying around for about an hour and a half, and the most powerful defense, the most powerful military in the world has ever seen, took no actions to stop them, including when the last plane was flying for the heart of our defense establishment, the Pentagon, and in fact lied about it, probably shot down Flight 93 over Pennsylvania. We still don't know what happened there. But if they took any action at all,
it probably was shot down. That's what I think.
Yeah, it probably was. If they took any action at all, they shot down and lied about it. But just months before this, golfer Payne Stewart, who was a very famous golfer at the time, died very tragically in a plane. His private plane, I think, whatever. Him and everybody on board, something happened where there's an oxygen leak or something in the cabin. So all the oxygen was sucked out of the cabin instantly. They all died. Instantly. So there was a plane of corpses flying, and the authorities were, you know, very concerned about this. They've quickly figured out what's going on. Nobody was answering them. So they sent fighter jets up within 15 minutes to make sure that plane didn't crash in a populated area. You had almost an hour and a half from the first plane to the last plane on 9/11. And the authorities didn't send up any fighter jets. They did nothing except maybe shoot down Flight 93 and lie about it. So it's very hard to accept. I mean, so the most benign explanation for 9/11 is that, you know, there was an inexcusable stand down. And of course, then you had the supposed drill that was going on that day, and you would see these kind of drills in so many more recent events, Boston bombing, things like that, where drills were going on at the same time, we're told. And that was the first one I know of. It's very suspicious. And, you know, did a drill get turned into something else? I don't know. I can only speculate. But all I know is that there
with that one plane, with all those passengers on it, there was witnesses. It claimed that they saw, like, a fireball hit it.
Yeah, well, there are witnesses that say that. There were the witnesses that say, you know, a lot of things, but there are also, you know, there's reason to question everything about the planes and the passengers because, you know, very mysteriously and very curiously, all those planes were at very low capacity that day, you know, one third full, one quarter full, very strangely. And you had all the I've written about all the celebrities. Now, a lot of this is probably public relations. Maybe their publicists invented it to be, you know, drama. And, you know, look, I, you know, my client, you know, he almost got on. He almost died on 9/11. Watch his next movie. But so many of these claim that. And, you know, were that these? I mean, the list is really long. I haven't hidden history three. And were there that many celebrities in Boston where the, you know, Flight 11 was coming out of, or Washington, D.C., where Flight 77 was coming out? I mean, I don't think so. That stretches credulity to the breaking point. And then you have the curious changes in the pilots. So many of these pilots were replaced at the last minute as well. So these are the kind of things I think that people ought to be asking. And of course, 9/11 has, you know, some mysterious deaths associated with it as well that I list in the book. Barry Jennings, one notable example, who described very graphically hearing explosions in Building 7. And he died mysteriously after appearing in Loose Change. Dylan Avery's from – I interviewed Dylan Avery on my show last year or year before that. And he described how he went looking for – he wanted to talk to Barry Jennings' family. Barry Jennings' family, like, disappeared. They couldn't find them. And he hired a private investigator who resigned in fear and told him, don't ever call me again. So this is the climate. Is that because they were crazed hijackers who were all dead? I don't think so. Just like it wasn't Lee Harvey Oswald threatening all the people that claimed they were threatened in the JFK assassination. This is another familiar part of this witness intimidation where they get threatening phone calls. They have authorities, you know, FBI and people, they say, hey, look, you know, if you didn't see Oswald in that window, you didn't see anything. They have witnesses that claim this. You know, you heard three shots, that was it. That's all we're interested in. Same thing with 9/11. If you're not going to talk about the crazed hijackers and with the box cutters and plastic knives and Osama bin Laden, then we don't want to hear from you.
Or oil in the Middle East, we can go that too. But again, too, supposedly that video camera at that service station got an image like a missile. They captured that. Now, I don't know if I, you know, dreamt that, but that's what I remember going back, you know, years ago hearing.
Well, I don't know if anybody's ever seen that, but that's certainly been the speculation. And I don't, you know, people have said, why would they do that? You know, I'm not a conspirator. I don't know. I don't know why they do anything. But yeah, to me, if you're, you know, they're not afraid of killing people, they certainly don't hesitate to do that. So I don't know why they would, you know, have used a missile for that instead of a plane. I really don't know. But
a plane, if you think about it, the fuel on board would have created a huge fireball. Which, again, I've seen images of the Pentagon. You know, there was holes in the Pentagon where there were still offices with office equipment and chairs and everything. Yeah. If it would have been a fireball from the plane hitting it, I just don't – it would have been scorched. It would have been it would have been different than that.
Yeah, you'd think so. I mean, that's there's a lot of inconsistency there between what happened there and what happened in the World Trade Center. And but, you know, I all we can do, because we're, you know, we're just somebody like me. This is years after the event, 20 years after the event, and trying to talk to people. I mean, I've tried to get in touch with some of the firefighters and the original New Jersey moms and people like that. They were the victims that were actually not buying the story. Most of them, unfortunately, did, but a lot didn't. And I've been trying to contact people like that, and it's very hard to get people to talk. There's a lot of fear, and even the ones that were vocal at one time have backed off. I think they know maybe about some of the deaths, and maybe some of them were bought off. I don't know.
Well, a friend of mine, Art Bell, you know, we would talk quite a bit off air. I mean, you know, we talk a lot. And, you know, he had a couple guests, I can't remember their names offhand, that talked about, you know, the Twin Towers and what happened, and they gave their own speculation. And after they were done with the interview, he wanted to get them back on it, you know, again. And they were scared to come back on.
Yeah, that's you run into that where people who were initially who are initially willing to talk later. And I don't blame anyone, because like I said, if you Richard Gage, the founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, who I've had on my show a few times, he told me his marriage broke up over this. There are lots of other examples of that where, Jim Garrison, very famously, if you watch JFK, the movie, it's very accurate when, Kevin Costner, tells Sissy Spacek, damn, Liv, I can't fight the whole world and you too. And he's exactly right, because that's what he was doing. And unfortunately, in real life, they didn't walk off hand in hand. His wife left him. And his kids, I'm still trying to find out if any of the kids even support his legacy. But a lot of times that happens as well. The kids reject him as well, so you can't even talk to the kids. But Jim Garrison, if you want to know a real profile in courage, and my friend John Barber of Real People, who's very interested in the JFK assassination as well, he's a good friend of mine now, he told me this story because he worked with Jim Garrison, that Jim Garrison on his deathbed summoned the wife who had left him, who betrayed him when he needed her most, summoned her to his bedside and demanded that they be remarried so that she could collect his pension. That's a profile in courage right there. But there aren't many people that would have the love in their heart to do that. But unfortunately, many of these people that are whistleblowers, not only does the government go after them and target them, and their friends and family and workplaces reject them, but yeah, their closest family members, their wives, their children, repudiate them. So they're left completely all alone. So they have to, any future whistleblowers have to scratch their heads and say, well, I don't know, is this worth it? Nobody's going to believe me, except for, a few so-called conspiracy theorists. That's who's going to believe me. So it's, I guess I can't really push too hard to people that, to say, can you come forward and talk? What's the benefit to them other than just trying to set history right? And unfortunately, I'm writing about history, but I recognize that most people are historically illiterate in America, and most people just don't care about history. They don't know history.
That is the problem. You know what? A lot of people say when we have certain interviews, well, that happened 20 years ago. Or that happened 47 years ago. That's nothing. Well, yeah, it happened, and it is something. Now, one of the people on chat just said, what was the motive of Twin Towers? Can you sum that up in about 2 minutes? What do you think the motive was?
Well, again, I don't know what motivates these people at all, but I think that clearly we saw what happens afterwards. I think you can just, is after JFK, Vietnam, and so forth, you can see what happens as a result of it. I believe that it was done to make our foreign policy even more neocon, Zionist-oriented, because that's certainly who benefited. Israel benefited, or the neocons benefited. I believe that the authoritarians in government benefited because they were able to pass the Patriot Act, the Homeland Security, create the Homeland Security, the clampdown on civil liberties. I believe this was a huge authoritarian move, and we're certainly seeing it now. With the lockdown and all the things you're seeing that are going on in the world now, it's kind of just a reflection of what happened then, because we kind of took some of the real big first steps there, free speech zones, and we're all at war. If you're not with us, you're with the terrorists and all that stuff. I think, and they created this invisible war on terror, which whatever that means, it's an invisible enemy, but we're a perpetual war. I would think that's the motivation for it, that it consolidated power to them, and it certainly made people. Well, fear.
And it also took some of our rights away from us, too.
Absolutely. Most certainly did. And so it's, it's that's the only thing I can do. I can speculate. But, everything in history, trying to figure out why people do what they do, because they don't make sense to me, and I don't think they make sense to any decent people. But people in power have different motivations. They want to keep that power at all costs. So, but I would like, in the time we have, because I know we're probably running out of time.
Yeah, let's find out about your books and stuff.
Right. Well, I want to urge people, if they could want to support me, my my book, Crimes and Cover-Ups in American Politics, 1776-1963, forward by Ron Paul. It's coming out in paperback next month. And basically, my publisher, after initially asking for Hidden History 3, is backing off a bit now because the world has changed and they're a little bit afraid of the conspiracy stuff. And they're telling me basically whether they publish the next book is going to be based on how well this book does. So if you want to help me out, please pre-order that or order it when it comes out. It's going to have a couple new chapters as well, and you'll learn about early history, and you'll learn how we got to the place we are today when you see the lies that they've been telling us since the beginning of the Republic.
And how can they find it?
They can find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, you know, all the places, the publisher, Skyhorse. So get the best deal out there for you, and, you know, you can find out all about me at DonaldJeffries.news, my write-up Substack. Again, if you do a search for me, you'll find out probably more than you want to know, or certainly you'll be able to find my interviews, my shows, and so forth, and you'll find my blog and my Substack articles, my articles for Lou Rockwell, I write there as well, and you'll be able to find all my books, which are going to be six when my sixth book comes out in November. So
great. Well, hey, I want to thank you, Don, for being on. It was kind of refreshing because we didn't talk about UFOs tonight. And, well, you have a good one, and we'll get you back on here in the near future. How's that?
Oh, I'd be happy anytime you want me. Thank you.
Okay, my friend, you take care.
You too.
Well, tomorrow, James, who's our guest, and what are we going to be talking about?
Well, our guest tomorrow is Mr. Mark Alpert, and he is a physicist, a science nerd, and he can talk about anything science-wise, universe-wise, space, you name it. It's going to be a very interesting show.
And who's our second guest?
Our second guest is going to be a Mr. James Clarkson, and he's got some new stuff to talk about concerning UFO, so that's going to be a good one, too.
Well, yeah, and again, I want to thank Metatron Power and Light for our bumper music. Ed Roman, check him out on our website. We got where you can go to our website and click on to it and go to his website. It's edroman.net. Well, everybody have a good one. You know, everybody, you know, I was getting emails during the show. I'm on two different chats, and, you know, it's fresh tonight. We can't just talk about UFOs four nights a week. We really can't, and people being abducted and Bigfoot. We have to have other subjects on the show. Otherwise, it's not entertainment, as my friend Art would say. Well, everybody have a good one. We will catch you tomorrow on the other side. So take care.
Then you know me too well, know me too well.